TED Audio Collective.
Thanks for listening to TED Tech. I'm Simone Ross, the tech curator here. How will artificial intelligence change our world? Last year, AI expert and former head of Google China, Kai-Fu Lee, and Stanley Chen, one of China's top science fiction talents, co-wrote a book to explore just that. It's called AI 2041, 10 Visions for the Future. Each chapter is an imaginative, creative story, accompanied by an analysis of the tech and an explanation of why such science fiction might actually be plausible. Stories of separated twins who have their own AI companions, or lovers who have never met over 20 years of pandemic living, with each story offering a unique framework to think about what our future could look like. I interviewed Kai-Fu and Stanley at a TED membership event in 2021.
This show is brought to you by Schwab. You're here because you like to keep a pulse on trends in technology. Well, now you can invest in what's trending in artificial intelligence, big data, robotic revolution, and more with Schwab Investing Themes. It's an easy way to invest in ideas you believe in. Schwab's research process uncovers emerging trends, then their technology curates relevant stocks into themes. Choose from over 40 themes. Buy all the stocks in a theme as is, or customize to better fit your investing goals, all in a few clicks. Schwab Investing Themes is not intended to be investment advice or a recommendation of any stock or investment strategy. Learn more at schwab.com/thematic investing.
Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
You're growing a business, and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate, no coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Hackers and cybercriminals have always held this kind of special fascination.
Obviously, I can't tell you too much about what I do.
It's a game. Who's the best hacker? And I was like, well, this is child's play.
I'm Dina Temple-Raston. And on the Click Here podcast, you'll meet them and the people trying to stop them.
We're not afraid of the attack. We're afraid of the creativity and the intelligence of the human being behind it.
Click here. Stories about the people making and breaking our digital world.
AI machine.
Satellite. Engine ignition.
Click here.
And liftoff.
Click here. Every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you so much for joining us for today's event featuring technologist and AI expert Dr. Kai-Fu Lee and science fiction writer Stanley Chen. They are co-authors of the new book, AI 2041, 10 Visions for Our Future, which will be released here in the US on September 14th. Kai-Fu, Stanley, thank you both so much for joining us. Kai-Fu, I'm going to start with you. Why write this book together?
Well, it is my belief that AI is the most important technology for mankind in the history of mankind. And it's important for everyone to really understand it, its implications and challenges. But just reading technology descriptions, such as the ones I have written as a technologist and investor, is just not reachable to everyone. And I think it's so important that if there is a way to make the storytelling really interesting and engaging and even entertaining, then more people can access it and can kind of see where the future holds. So with that idea in mind, I talked to Stanley about co-authoring the book with him writing the stories. And that's what hopefully will draw a lot more people to it.
Wonderful. And Stanley, I believe part of the process was you wrote the story first, and then Kai-Fu would write the accompanying sort of explanation. Did that constrain your imagination or your creativity in any way, knowing that there had to be an explanation of how the technology would actually work?
I'll say the process is not exactly like what you imagine. So I think both Kai-Fu and I, we build up the roadmap together. We'll discuss in depth like how AI technology will evolve over the next 20 years and which points of technology we should package and put into different stories. And then I come up with some directions attached to each story, and then we would discuss back and forth. And then I get down to write a story, and then Kai-Fu will write the tech analysis accordingly. So I think from the very beginning, from scratch, we are collaborating very close, and I don't think it will restrict my imagination, but the other way around, it trigger and inspire a lot of my imagination based on the realistic facts of AI technologies. I used to work by myself, so I can do whatever I love. But now it seems like the conversation and interaction really brings some chemistry into the story. It's really like dancing.
Right. So a Stanley and Kai-Fu dancing duet is what we have here. Great. So I'd like to understand a little bit, Kai-Fu, from you. You know, we've been talking about the potential of AI for such a long time now, you know, decades even. And what's different now?
Well, you know, I know that more than everyone else because I did my PhD in 1988. And then I worked for Apple, Microsoft, Google. My CEO always asked me, when will AI be real? And that's really just happened in the last 5 years. If we look at how much progress has been made to date, this is not going to 2041. This is just to date. Think about AlphaGo, AlphaGo Zero, AlphaFold, GPT-3, autonomous vehicles, the use of AI in all internet companies, the use of AI in financial applications, and all the robots that's working and all the RPA technologies that's displacing white-collar work. It's really been blossoming in the last 5 years. And I think that is just the beginning for much more is to come in the next 20.
So our future is finally here. We have some questions from the audience. So this one is from Estefania. Do you think there's a limit to AI since it's a human creation, or will it reach a point of self-development?
Yeah, I'll take that first. So AI actually is not completely programmed. It's programmed to have a goal. It's programmed to have an architecture, but then it learns by itself on more data. And the more data that's fed, as long as you have enough processor, the better it gets. And that is what has enabled the huge progress in the last 5 years. It's not just smart people inventing new algorithms to solve all these problems, but it's people framing it in a certain way and then letting the machine learn for itself. So the self-organization, self-learning, and the fact that it gets better with every 10 times increase in data, it gets better. That is the amazing and sometimes scary thing about AI. Now, about AI's ability to self-program, I don't doubt that will happen to some extent. But so far, AI still requires a certain level of direction from a programmer, and then it will learn under the architecture set out by the programmer. So in the context of the book AI 2041, I think you will see AI that is highly intelligent, very interactive, gets better than you think on a lot of capabilities, and it keeps growing. But it's not growing as many people would assume in previous science fiction that it becomes a superset of humans, but rather it grows in many directions on many things we cannot do. But humans still maintain, you know, our soul, our creativity, our ability to love. And that is, I think, something that I don't see replacing by AI in the next 20 years.
So we will sort of maintain our humanity and we won't be aged out by the AI. Stanley, do you have some thoughts on that?
So I think it all depends on the three key factors, like computation power, like the algorithm, and also I think the data. So as Kai-Fu mentioned, like right now, I couldn't see that like the singularity point will coming over the next 20 years. But as a science fiction writer, I'm pretty looking forward to that day. Even maybe it will somehow like conquer the human beings.
Okay. Conquering human beings, that sounds a little scary. Okay, another question from the audience, this one from Midan. I believe this is directed to Kai-Fu. In a recent interview with Peter Diamandis, you were talking about longevity and 150 years lifespan. How do you reconcile this prediction based on science and tech advancement with the reality of ever-increasing prevalence of chronic diseases at a decreasing age onset?
Okay, I don't think I quite made a 150-year projection. Peter may have. I'm a strong believer in that AI will collect, will use a lot of data, much more than medical doctors and scientists have ever been able to collect, including our genetic sequencing, our MRI and scans, and the full blood test with all the markers. And with all that data coming in from a large number of people, it will be able to compare any individual to a prototypical healthy person and measure the gap and figure out ways to improve, whether it is sleep or reducing stress or eating better or nutrients or medicine or exercising. That is something that is not so far off. I am actually personally experimenting with a company we invested in. I have been collecting all of my data extensively and for the past year, and I've been measuring my blood for now against people who are at my age and 5 years younger, 10 years younger, 5 years older, et cetera. And it's given me very sensible advice. Now, with a human doctor interpreting the AI output, of course, and telling me, okay, you're really not exercising enough. We should not think of aging as the inevitable, irreversible reality. We can't live forever. Our body has a certain expiration date. But I think there are many ways to make ourselves healthier. It's also people say, oh, I don't want to live forever. I'll be miserable. I'll be sick. The whole idea is not longevity for longevity's sake, but it's how to get you to be younger, more energetic, and more healthier. And that's correlated with living longer. So I believe this will happen. And I don't know how long we can extend our age. So there's no reason in the next 20 years, we can't be in the mid-high 80s. In another 20 years, maybe in the 90s, even up to 100. That's definitely imaginable based on what I have experienced. And the gap that I think remains to make us healthy in a precision medicine kind of way that we just haven't collected all the data. We're health-wise, we're in the Yahoo days, right? Yahoo days of the internet. That's where we're at. We haven't yet discovered Google, Facebook, and all the rest. So we're just collecting the data, and I think the best is yet to come.
I love that we're in the Yahoo days. Another question from the audience. So while we're talking about improving things, this one from Monica, what's the impact of AI for education?
So I believe if you look at all the industries, education is one that has changed the least over the last 100 years, right? The way we communicate by Zoom, entertain ourselves with iPhones and VR, and working remotely is completely changed. The scene's totally different. Education is still one which is mostly a teacher giving a lecture to all, giving a test to all, giving homeworks to all. It's basically one size fit all kind of approach, and that's understandable historically because one could not afford, a teacher for every student. But I think going forward, I think we want a teacher for every student, because every student has different weaknesses, different preferences, different hobbies. Some would score better if we cast the problems as a basketball or as dancing or something that excite them. And also, if you can imagine an AI teacher companion that is watching over each student, helping with them, and making learning almost a gamification, a fun experiment. So a lot of the content can be taught by this personalized, targeted AI companion teacher. Right, we think about targeting as a bad thing because, you know, Facebook targets us with things that makes us addicted or extreme in views. But if it's targeting us to help us learn, then it's aligned with our goals. So I think that is a huge power of AI that can make a one AI teacher per student kind of a future. And the human teachers don't disappear at all. You still need human teachers to help with things like encouragement, personal connection, understanding values, and learning creativity, and encouraging critical thinking, and teaching about communication and teamwork and EQ and all that, then it becomes a much much better education, much more targeted and also personalized. Maybe Stanley can talk about the story in which he talked about AI education.
Yes, Stanley, go ahead.
Yeah, I highly recommend everyone who had interest in how AI could change the education industry should read the story Twin Sparrow. It's talking about two orphan boys who were adopted by two different family, which both use AI companion teacher in different way. So it's not only about customized algorithm for each student, but also, I mean, now we have this kind of online class like every day on Zoom, but it feels so isolated. So people might feel lonely when you spending a lot of time on a platform, but actually you couldn't feel each other. But in our imagination with NPL, natural language processing, and XR technology like AR, VR, MR, so actually you can have this kind of realistic presence of each other, and it's not isolating each other, but to reconnect each other. So hopefully when you finish the story, you'll feel the future of education is so hopeful and so warm and full of empathy and passionate of our like next generation future.
Yeah, right. Another question from the audience. This one from Fabio, I'm going to paraphrase it a little bit. So what is the impact of AI on poorer countries? How do we ensure that this is somewhat evenly distributed? Kai-Fu can go first.
Sure. I think in the short term, there are already efforts in place to make sure that big countries don't just come in and take all the apps and make them used locally and take all the data away and extract money without giving anything back. So I think having some short-term laws and regulations to ensure that if your citizens' data is being used to monetize some big country's app, that you're properly compensated for it. And then that money can go back in the economy, because really, really data is incredibly valuable, and that near-term measure needs to be done. In the longer term, I believe each country needs to develop its specialty. And as I describe in the book, it's really not just about AI. Sometimes it's about cultures that have special characteristics. You know, some culture really value craftsmanship. Others really value giving back. Others value service. Others value family. And I think globally speaking, AI will end up creating a lot of value, a lot of economic value. And it's not just AI, but also the advances in synthetic biology and energy and new materials. So things will become cheaper and better, so that in the future, more and more people won't have to do routine jobs for a living. They can do what they like, and they can contribute positive energy, and also the ideas can help globally. So I think, you know, some countries might want to focus on tourism and the exciting things about its civilization and the storytelling. So I think a lot of those will become possible. I think service industry will become huge. So, you know, today people are using products, branded, invented in the U.S., manufactured in China, which is why these two countries are a little bit, a lot more wealthier right now. But I think in the future, what will be of the greatest value is not just the products, because products will become commoditized with all the things we describe in the book. And what will value the most is service and human touch service and things that have strong cultural elements. So I think those are possible directions as well. And of course, all that said, every country should make sure people who are strong in learning about technology and algorithms and AI should get to do so, so that the country does not fall behind, because this is an incredibly important technology. Look at how much industrial revolution has helped U.S. Become a leader in globally. And I think AI is another potential equalizer or unequalizer. So countries should really value maybe not AI for everyone, but for those who are interested and skilled.
You've said that the AI should be sort of a great equalizer, but also potentially not. So Tom is asking why we should trust AI scientists to develop these powerful technologies. And I'd like to add on to that, you know, why should we trust our governments and regulators to help get us to a more equal society, as they claim to want to do?
Well, I'll take a shot and then Stanley can add to that. Well, we should first make sure everyone's educated so we can all become participants, watchdogs, and raise our opinion if the programmers and scientists and corporations and governments aren't doing their job. Hopefully, the book describes clearly that many of these problems of AI are actually externalities. They're not intentionally creating harm for the individuals, but they're done as a side effect. So I think the key thing then is, AI scientists are bad people, don't trust them, but it's rather make sure they're educated to understand with greater power comes greater responsibility. So what must they do when they program an algorithm to make sure it doesn't have bias or unfairness or treat, women or minorities unfairly, et cetera. And also better tools should be developed. So even if a scientist is negligent, it catches it up front. And also, with large internet companies, some of what they do is perhaps just out of greed. Others are maybe not well thought out. And some of it is just unintentional. So there needs to be watchdogs. I don't think we can abdicate our responsibility and say, hey, government, you fix the internet companies, break them up and punish them and make them pay big fines. That doesn't solve the root of the problem. The root of the problem is that AI is so powerful, with its algorithms so powerful, that large companies cannot resist using it to make money, and unintentionally and sometimes intentionally at our expense. So I think the key issue is how to align the large companies' interest with ours.
So it sounds like you think that we collectively also have somewhat of a responsibility and role in driving where this sort of AI future can take us. So, Stanley, I have a question for you. This one is also from the audience, from Hannah. What AI advancements that already exist do you think are stranger than fiction?
Yeah, I think there are a few things actually make me think like science fiction writers is kind of lack of imagination in reality. So for example, like deepfake, there's something I don't think in previous science fiction had a lot of description on the thing, like how people using technology to transfer their face, their voice, their movement to pretend one another. Meanwhile, it's not for good, but it's doing bad things, and how we can fight against those misbehaviors. So another thing is like right now, I think AI is more capable than human being on recognizing micro expression, even detecting all these small inflections in your voice, in your tongue, and they can foresee what your mental status is and what kind of reaction and response you might gonna make. So I think fundamentally we will learn a lot from AI because it's a mirror. It's like human beings, but it can reveal so many hidden structure and hidden knowledge from this huge amount of data, which a human being as a collective group couldn't really interpret deeply enough, but AI can.
So moving on to something where AI probably does have a big impact. Another audience question, this time from Jen. In the next 20 years, will some aspects of industry be fully replaced by AI? And will AI cause unemployment?
It's so easy to be replaced by machines. In another story called The Job Savior, and it actually set in California, San Francisco, is talking about how people should be taken care of when there's mass scale of structuralized unemployment happen, and along with the development of AI technology, like invaded into different industries. So our thought is like, besides basic income, that's one solution, but I think work is much more than making money. It's about dignity. It's about self-actualization. It's about how you finding your position in the family and among others in the society. So we have this kind of idea we should use and leverage AI technology to do the job allocation if we can live up to 150. So it's no way that you only do one or two or three jobs, right? So I think AI should totally work to help people to retrain and reallocate in a new job and to help them to find their own value in this highly uncertainty dynamic change of job change.
This question comes from a bunch of people. What scares you most about AI and the future?
I think the most scary thing about AI is it can be an amplifier to blow up all the negativities in humanity. So maybe you've heard from the news, like there's a chatbot on Twitter from Microsoft, and it learned all the cursing and bias and discrimination during the interaction and conversation with the trolls. So I think that's something really scares me, because during this kind of feedback loop, it might trigger even more like darker side of human beings. Right now, we have this kind of extremist on the internet, on the social medias, but whether we understand if they're talking with the chatbot or not. So maybe some terrorists were using this way to trigger some extreme emotions and protesting virtually. So I think that something scares me in the future.
What excites you most about AI? So Kai-Fu, you first and then Stanley.
Well, I've already talked a bit about getting AI aligned with our interests. In some sense, it's addressing Stanley's concern that AI would target each person and make us think things that are against our interests. But let's suppose for the moment that we can somehow get at least a set of people to program AI in a way that aligns itself with our future interests. I think that's something that's incredibly exciting. You know, Tristan Harris talks about it. None of us know how to do it. It's perhaps a new app ecosystem. Maybe it's a new device. We're all willing to pay money for things that enrich us, things that make us happier, more knowledgeable, So if only we can figure out how to incentivize people to build that app and get monetized for it, and you got to align the economic interest to make that happen. That's probably the one very important thing that excites me. The other thing I would mention is that everything is double-edged sword. We talk about job displacement, routine work being done by AI, but I would ask that at the end of the day, right, in 20 years, let's say all the routine jobs are, or 90% of the routine jobs are displaced by AI, does that put us in a better or worse place, right? Assume we help people transition from routine jobs to better jobs, and we educate our prosperity in a responsible, constructive way so that people are pursuing their interests and their talents and not repeating what's routine, then we will have done something that is phenomenal for mankind, namely that we will have liberated humanity from ever having to do routine work so that we can do things that we were really put on this earth to do. So that's probably the number one thing that excites me. But the road to get there is treacherous and dangerous and full of potholes.
Stanley, what excites you?
I think it might totally change the way we do the scientific research. For example, now we're using AlphaFold to predict the protein structure, and we're using computer vision to dig out the connectome of human brain. So I think there's a lot of things ahead of us, a way for AI to help human beings to understand more about the fundamental mechanism of ourselves and the world. So I think that is a paradigm shift in the future. So with the help of AI, I think we're going to fix a lot of unsolvable problems, including climate changes. So I think that's very not positive future ahead of us, but I think we should hold on to that positive imagination, because we try to create a future, we should start from imagining one.
Well, I think positivity is a great way and a great place to end. So AI is going to hopefully liberate humanity from drudgery and free us to do the things that we were put on the earth to do. And it is going to hopefully help solve things like climate change for us. I think that pretty much wraps up our time for today. So thank you both so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And thank you, Kai-Fu and Stan.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Support for TED Tech comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is an all-in-one management software with apps for every business need. Odoo has apps for CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, manufacturing, and everything in between. And they're all-in-one, easy-to-use software. And the best part about Odoo? All Odoo apps are integrated, helping you get things done faster and more efficiently. So when you think about business, think Odoo. To learn more, visit odoo.com/tedtech. That's odoo.com/tedtech.